when we go through life and we go on our spiritual journeys, periodically somebody, I would say, I know I have from the pulpit, that we need to assess our strengths and our weaknesses. And we need to somehow come to terms that when we hear feedback about our strengths and weaknesses, that we become defenseless and hear that with humility, and we can adjust our spiritual journey so that transformation can occur. Well, in my seminary experience, some of the comments I had about my weaknesses in my writing is that I would put too many vegetables in the stew. And the professor said, some of what you write is interesting, some's not, but you do put too many vegetables in the stew. And I had some feedback about my sermon from more than one person last week, and as I looked at my notes, I think I put too many vegetables in the stew. And I did, so that's all there is to that. So I thought what I would do was pull one of those vegetables out of the stew and spend a little more time with it before we get on to the mission, because I think there's a lot of nutrients in this vegetable for our spiritual lives, and I'd like to spend a bit of time on it. And that was some part of the reading from a book, The Meaning of Revelation, by H.R. Niebuhr. And I like to read theologians that experienced the Second World War and that experienced the evolution or the development of Germany and the things that went on in Europe prior to World War II, because to me they have a good sense about what they call demonic. And demonic, from these theologians' perspective, is not about Satan or not about demons. Demonic is about institutions that move toward a sense of the disregard for the human being. They would call that demonic. And they witnessed nations moving in directions that disregarded the human being and what was good for the human being. And so when these people write, I like to know their history, because I know in their writing they are combating that movement toward the demonic. And so when I hear their words, it's a thick hearing. It's a hearing of depth. And I want to convey that when this man writes, he writes in a depth to what he writes, and I think there's something we need to pay attention to, and I also think he counters something in our culture. And he writes, "In eternal history, on the other hand, society is a community of selves. Here we do not only live among other selves, but they live in us, and we in them. Relations here are not external but internal, so that we are our relations and cannot be selves save that we are members of each other. When there is strife in this community, there is strife and pain in us. When there is peace, we have peace in ourselves. Here, social memory, to be sure, is our own past living in every self. When we become members of such a community of selves, we adopt its past as our own, and thereby we are changed in the present. In our history, association means community, the participation of each living self in a common memory and a common hope, no less than in a common world of nature. We are each other, which goes contrary to the hyper-individualism of our present culture. It's contrary to the breakdown of the community in our culture, that we are each other. We are not individuals. We are born in relationship, we are reared in relationship, and we exist in relationship. Our church is talking about a vision and a mission. And this is something came to me in the middle of the night. I got up and I wrote it, and it may sound kind of corny, but it may not. And I think that our inner world and how we are interconnected, I would want to call home base. So I can ask myself, Gregory, how's your home base? And what I mean by that is, how do I hold this church? How do I hold the individuals of this church in my imagination? And we've talked about that before. Do I hold the individuals in this church and this church as a whole in my imagination so that when I think about who we are as a people, I am energized. I'm invigorated to do more, to contribute more, to volunteer more, and I'm excited about the life of this church. Is that how I hold this church in my imagination? Is that how I hold the individuals in this church in my imagination? When I think of individuals and I think of their stories and their struggles and their celebrations, do their struggles draw empathy from me to move me toward behavior, to stand next to them, to help them move through time? Or when I think of members of our church, is something negative conjured up and it blocks me from contributing? It interferes with invigorating me to volunteer for the church. Or do I say, I tried that once and so I'm not going to try it again? Or I went to church all of my life and something happened and I'm not going to fall in love with the church and invest my time and invest my life in the church again, because when I do, it always ends up breaking my heart and hurt me. So I'm going to be a passive member of a church and I enjoy what happened, but I'm not going to invest in the church the same way I did in my history because it's too painful. Because I can't depend on it. Because we're human and we fail. Our spiritual journey and our spiritual responsibility is to work on transforming ourselves, recognizing that we do hold one another in our imaginations and we are part of each other, and to work to grow so that we can experience each other in a loving, caring, compassionate way. How do we have this church within our imaginations? How do we have one another in our imaginations? And as Unitarian Universalists, I can even ask, how do we hold the earth and the environment within our imaginations? Because if we hold one another in our imaginations and we hold this earth within our imaginations with an attitude of care and an attitude of love, we will not do harmful things to one another. We will do caring and loving things to one another. And if we have that kind of mindset, we will be invigorated about what's happening in our church, and we will figure out a way how to be involved in the community of our church. The theologian H. Richard Niebuhr informs us that if we are not attentive to our spiritual lives in that way, if we withdraw into ourselves and honor the falseness of the hyper-individualism of our culture, something demonic will come in its place. Something hurtful to us as a people will come in its place. The more we withdraw into ourselves because of our history, and if we can't move through our history and love ourselves and love others as we learn their histories, the more space we create for something to occur that we do not want to occur. That theologian warns us that we need to be involved and we need to honor how we hold one another in our imaginations. We also know from our Buddhist reading and from the reading of Thich Nhat Hanh that somehow we are to love our faith ancestors, and we've worked in this church to bring that into, not only are we love our faith ancestors, we are to love ourselves through our own history. How many of us have trouble when we look at ourselves and our history that we don't love that part of who we are? Some of us do. But our faith encourages us to look in and to love ourselves in our own history. And we know from the writing of Christopher Bolas, a psychological theorist, he talks about if we don't own the harmful things we've done and work with those, that we can't love ourselves and can't love others. And the emphasis of these writers is that somehow we have a relationship to history. Not only do we have a relationship to history, We have a relationship to history that activates certain emotions and certain care, and that we are to be responsible for events in history. We are to take, and I've tried to understand it, how am I to be responsible for slavery? How am I to be responsible for the intern camps at World War II, for how we treated Japanese citizens? How am I to be responsible for what went on before I was born? Our spiritual teachers tell us that we are to be so. We are to be so responsible. So this nugget that H. Richard Niebuhr points us in the direction of, I find very confronting for my spiritual life. And I know if there's a tension between how we hold each other in our imaginations and how we hold history in our imaginations and how we hold ourselves, our own history in our imaginations, with our philosophy with Unitarian Universalism. In the latest UU World, there's an article on Sundown Towns. And Sundown Towns came in the 1920s, 30s, where African Americans were ran out of town, literally ran out of town, and said, you are not to be in town after sundown. And I thought, very courageous for that article to be there, and excited. It's a subject that I've studied in and tried to understand. But then at the end, he says, none of us should feel personally responsible for what our parents and our grandparents did or did not do. There will be enough guilt to go around for our own generation if we do not confront or address the bitter consequences of these stories. And I got to thinking about that, and I think that's the tension we live in. If I connect to my own personal history, if I connect to my faith tradition's history, not just the good stuff, am I responsible to bring about or try to bring about change? If I do that, do I become responsible for sundown town? I cannot answer that question for you. I struggle to answer that question for myself, because if I become responsible for that history, then that means I have to change my life. And I like my life. And do I want to be changed my life? Do I want to be called in a different direction? When we choose a mission, it is my sense the healthier we are at owning our own histories, owning the history of the faith tradition, the healthier we are at holding one another in our imaginations with an attitude of love and compassion, the healthier we will be when we hold our church community in our imaginations with love and compassion, the healthier our mission will be. And I'm suggesting there is a direct relationship. A mission cannot be something that purely serves our needs. A mission cannot be something that we go out and try to promote others to agree with our particular belief systems. Now, these are both missions that churches in our culture undergo and do. Their mission is to get others to believe like them in many churches. That's part of their mission. And I'm saying that's adolescent. That's getting people to join your peer group so you can feel okay about who you are as you develop your identity. That's what that is. Affirm me, believe like me. That's not an adult mission. An adult mission is to identify something that's real, where people are hurting, where people are suffering. That's not about necessarily me. And then to create some kind of activity that addresses that suffering, whether I receive reward from it or not. I'm going to an example of this. There is a group out called Parents United. Parents United is an organization that has about 118 chapters across the United States, I think in maybe 20 states. And it's a group that is created to deal with the effects of childhood sexual abuse. somebody said, don't talk about childhood sexual abuse from the pulpit, Gregory. How can we not talk about that from the pulpit? I got some statistics. They're old statistics, 1993. I have not seen our culture getting particularly healthier, so I don't think these statistics are good. But the statistic was that 60 million Americans were affected by childhood sexual abuse in 1993. I know from my early studies there are 25%. There's a disagreement on statistics. Some are liberal, some are more conservative, a disagreement. But there's probably 18 to 25 women who are sexually abused by the time they're 18. 12%, say 7 to 12% of men, which sometimes people say are low because men aren't prone to get help, so they can't be included in that statistic, that are affected by childhood sexual abuse. Childhood sexual abuse, the long-term effects of childhood sexual abuse are fear, anxiety, intimacy issues, sexual difficulties in relationships, sense of self is diminished. All the things that would contribute not to sit in a community and love oneself and love the community. All the things that would prevent us to become invigorated about choosing a mission. When I speak, I know I am speaking to persons who have been affected by childhood sexual abuse. I know that. And I am mindful of that. It is an example that we could choose to address in our mission, in a mission. We could become a sponsor for a chapter, and this is just an example. There are many examples. We could become a sponsor for a chapter of Parents United and construct a home and a house for a chapter of Parents United, connect with the clinical community, and begin to provide services for people who can't afford services, because often persons who are affected by childhood sexual abuse can't afford services. That would not be a mission that meets our needs as a community. That would be a mission where we look out at our community and we say, this is a problem that's not being addressed and there are many people suffering from this problem. And nobody's really doing anything about it. Not nobody. We could do something about that. We could. That would be a mission of maturity. That would be an adult mission, not one that tends to lean toward narcissism and feeding our own egos. In order to undertake a mission that meets the needs of others, I have to give up a bit about myself. I have to let go a bit about who I am, and I have to become concerned for the other. Not so easy to do. When I have my mind filled of images and memories of people, of television characters, of football teams that I have feelings and emotions attached to, when I join a group that's going to choose to do an adult mission, I've got to let go of some of those feelings attached to others, attached to TV characters, attached to football games, because we may have to have a meeting at the time of the Super Bowl. God forbid. I'll do my best not to schedule that. We'd bring a big screen in and watch it here and then have a meeting. Depending who's playing. But isn't that how we are? Isn't that how? We have emotions so attached to particular things, it would interfere with us choosing to participate in adult mission, meeting the real needs of people. We're comfortable. Don't suggest anything where I'd have to step off my comfort track. Because I'm okay with who I am and where I am, and I've spent 53 years getting to be in this track that I'm okay with who I am, and I like my track, and I like how I've got my life organized, and I got my rituals, and I got my TV shows, and I got my groups, and everything's going just fine. Don't tell me to give up my Thursday night to come in here and register people that are coming in for a group. I like my Thursday nights how they are. We're not going to have a mission statement unless we're willing to do a mission. What's a mission statement without a mission? If we do this and we choose to do an adult mission, we will come together as a community that matches the vision statement that we created, an emotionally safe environment and where we can activate and actualize the Unitarian Universalist seven principles. We will create in our minds our sense of church and our sense of community that feeds our spirit, that we know we are doing something that is really good, and that we will feel really good about it, even though our lives will be transformed and changed, which may create some anxiety, and we have to give up some things. I may even have to give up some of the negative feelings I have toward people that I feel injured me in this church. Because I may have to sit next to them while we're doing some kind of program. I may have to find out who they are. I may even find out that day I had that argument that I've been holding a grudge for 2 years, on that day something horrible happened in their life, which makes perfect sense of why they were in a bad mood. I may even find that out. I may even develop empathy for that person rather than rejecting that person. I may even begin to know that person. Now, I don't know about growing up and understanding women, but I know about men and boys growing up. And I know that when I had a fight with another boy, we ended up being close friends. It was an oddest thing in the whole world. But we were also in a small community where we had to go to class and school together. We couldn't avoid each other. My suspicion is people we have issues with in our imaginations are more like us than we want to deal with or we want to know. We may be actually using the negative feelings not to commit to the community. We may actually be using negative feelings about our historical church relations not to commit to a community in the here and now. We may actually have something going on within our own imaginations that prevent us from celebrating a joyful experience with a community who is about something. Creating a mission, speaking something into existence that does not yet exist, and being part of that process is what it means to be human and what it means to be a church and what it means to be a community. And it is only in community that we can fully potentialize who we are as human beings. Because we are community creatures. We are relational creatures. It is who we are. And when we come together and say there's a real need in our community, and we say, yes, let's do something about it, and then we do something about it, we are at our best. And I am inviting you, myself. I'm inviting this community. Let's find out what our best is.